say, if you looked at my freezer, you'd see a bunch of ice cream. And if you around your apartment, you'd find a bunch of whiskey bottles.
Can we start the show like that and ask how much ice cream do you buy?
No, I stocked up on a lot of ice cream recently when it was on sale.
And around my apartment, you find a bunch of desiccated virgin husks with their fluid sucked out.
Wow. So are we recording?
We are. Yes, we've been recording this whole time.
Who are you going to call? Podcast. Hey.
Does that count as a comic?
I'm sure there was. Yeah, I remember reading a Ghostbusters comic as a kid. It was a Slimer comic.
Yeah. Oh, Slimer comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Now comics.
Did they tell his backstory where he's actually John Belushi?
No. It was cartoon Slimer.
Yeah.
Aww.
It was me, Ecto Cooler Slimer. Hey, everybody. This is your host, Henry Gilbert, HENERYG on Twitter. And I passed 2,400 followers. Thanks, people.
Wait. I can't do a. Oh, my noises aren't up yet.
All right. And then I'm here with the unprepared regular co-host.
But it'll be done by the time you finish your sentence.
Christopher Antista.
Yeah. See, I told you.
All right. And then we're here also joined by here with here.
With here one by. Of our, by one of, here with.
One of our oldest buddies.
By with here.
And bearded friends. Michael Raparez.
Woo! Wiki Parez.
Wiki Parez. Formerly of Games Radar, formerly of PlayStation,
the official magazine, and now I think, well, should I announce where I am now?
Yeah, it's funny.
I'm at MacLife.
Oh, nice.
I am the invisible overlord behind MacLife.com.
So check it out if you want to see Michael's invisible hand.
Yes, possibly even some writing in the near future.
What?
All right.
Yeah, people don't associate you with rad.
Nah. It's not like what I do or anything.
That's okay. I don't write anymore either.
What an exciting week, huh, guys?
What? Wait, what happened?
Nah, nothing.
I got a PSV.
I'm tired. Yeah, boy, how was everybody's Thanksgiving? I was sick and didn't eat anything. Actually,
really?
Or bear it? Well,
Papa John's.
No. I have. I know they hate it when we get political, but I've stopped eating Papa John's since that news came out.
He
recanted
that though recently, though. Like yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well. I'll look into that, but I'm...
You were talking about the Papa John's guy saying, now that Obama's elected, I can't afford to pay my employees a living wage and health insurance, and the Costco guy came out and like, I done nothing but raise salaries and lower mine, and I'm still fine. Yep. You should just learn how to deal with that.
Maybe if you made edible fucking pizza...
Well, I like the Papa John's pizza. I didn't like that. I knew he was a Romney supporter, and by supporter I mean giving him millions of dollars.
I feel like we've gone too far already.
All right. Yeah. Anyway,
that's what it was. He spent so much money on Romney. It's like, if I'm not getting a return on this investment, you're all going.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I basically just slept and healed and then played some video games mostly. I played a lot of XCOM. That game is awesome.
Really? You like XCOM?
Oh, it's
I
so good.
Love
it. Like
XCOM.
It just seems like an un-Henry game.
Everybody keeps telling me
that.
I'm really pissed off at hearing that from people. Look, if I said I was playing a real-time strategy game, I'd understand that. But this is a turn-based strategy game is hardcore in the way the Japanese strategy games are that I love.
But only when they're from Nintendo.
No.
Or from Japan.
But I have played a lot of Civ and Age of Empires.
Really?
I have played both of those. Yeah. I don't squawk about it all the time. But
not like this Mario guy?
Yes. Not like a Mario guy. But I do enjoy American-made strategy games.
Radical. Sorry.
Exactly.
Just me plugging this week's episode of Laser Time. I've always wanted to do. It's live action adaptations of
cartoons.
Television cartoons.
I'm mad I wasn't in on that one.
You were supposed to be. We were supposed to do it when you guys were.
You
on
told
microphone.
Me not to come in here though.
We had enough people, and now it turned into a cliffhanger two parter. Who shot Mr. Burns?
Boy, it makes me. You know, it's I feel sad when I come in sometimes. I hate giving up a Sunday sometimes to come in here, but then I'm sad when I'm not on the episode.
Exactly.
I just want to be unhappy.
Yeah, you're not telling the stories about when you bail in the last minute and I have to find somebody else to replace you.
When's that happen?
Once. That's okay.
When was that?
I forget. Like, I just woke up. Were you guys recording? Yeah, an hour ago, Henry.
Anyway, Thanksgiving, you guys.
Thanksgiving!
What did you guys do?
Mine was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No one's ever said that.
No, well, I went
the first pilgrims.
I spent it with my uncle, and he's a partner in a law firm, and recently bought a house in the hills of Sausalito.
Mm-hmm. Whoa!
And so we went out there. It is super fucking swank. Like, this place has two decks, one on top of the other, with glass railing.
Wow.
And a perfect unobstructed view of the bay. Like, and it wasn't foggy. I could look out across the water and see Alcatraz and Oakland and San Francisco.
Awesome.
It was beautiful.
Is this the uncle I met?
Yeah.
He was super
fun. I've only
fun.
Got like one uncle who lives in the bay.
No, he was just fun to drink with. And
yeah. No, he's a
you had a fun guy. Uncle.
Well, yes. My uncle and he's, gave he's me a new toilet seat with. And attached it himself.
That
so,
was generous of him.
Well, my grandfather lost his will to live and fell and broke his hip. Actually happened.
I'm sorry.
Comedy out of tragedy. See, Henry, that's how you do it.
Yes. So, but did he have a nice Thanksgiving dinner? With all the trimmings?
It was lovely, yeah. His former neighbor, Josh, who I'd met, lives in San Francisco, came over with his girlfriend, and they'd made like a butternut squash pie instead of pumpkin pie. It was actually much, much better than that sounds.
Huh.
It is. Well, only because you know what butternut squash tastes like, mm-hmm. not what it's named like.
Yeah.
And I think whoever named butternut squash should be taken out in the field and shot publicly in
maybe
front of everybody.
Maybe it sounded a lot tastier in like 1804.
Yes, before there was butter and nuts maybe. Invented, it probably, the name
just,
was probably
you just
fine.
Imagine like peanuts just sort of swimming in butter.
Exactly.
Like,
I remember
baked into a loaf of butter.
Back then, butter was quite a delicacy. Like,
It was just a squash invented
by
Arthur Butternut.
You had
butternut.
To get butter back in those days. You had to like stand churn. Over a churn.
You had
for
to have
like
a wife.
18 hours a day.
You had to have a wife. Chris, your Thanksgiving?
It was cool. I went over to a house, had a Thanksgiving with a bunch of people, including Tyler Wilde, who refuses to come on the show, even though he's in the house.
Is he? I didn't see him.
He's totally in the house.
Okay.
Tyler Wilde in the house.
And then we watched a Christmas special like immediately afterwards. Then we watched Elf. But I was trying to find my favorite Thanksgiving movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
But not on television.
Just beautiful. I'm a real deal. I'm a genuine article. I like me.
And did you guys
like me?
Those
did you guys
pillows?
Hear the lovely new Thanksgiving anthem
Ooh.
Recorded by What's Her Face?
No.
You got to get more specific, please.
Well, it's hard to get more specific because it's her debut single, but she's like the latest singer by the people who created Rebecca Black out of
oh,
their
wait.
Hearts.
Oh, wait. No, I saw a boy who did something like that.
Oh.
What's this called, Michael? Is it about Thanksgiving?
Yes. I think that might just be the title.
Thanksgiving. It's going
to
be hard to Google.
They used it in the second level of that Old Spice Adver game we were discussing earlier.
Did you guys... I actually didn't watch the parade this year. I used to watch it every year as a kid just to see the balloons, but it just became more and more about the Broadway musicals and bad new Broadway musicals.
Did you hear somebody died during the parade?
Jesus,
what?
No.
It was like a clown who had a heart attack while he was making balloon animals for kids.
Though I did find good, I saw...
And his wife, who was also a clown, was there and attempted to give him CPR.
Oh, dear.
That's so
sad. Man. Well, comic book related, there was a funny picture from the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, which was after the fact Spider-Man, that when they put the balloons down for the day, the Spider-Man balloon's face was buried in the butt of... of the Uncle Sam.
Can that be the picture for this episode?
Yeah, sure. And so, yeah, it's just, it looks like he's eating out Uncle Sam.
He's tossing Sam salad.
Yes.
To bring it all the way back to comics, I was excited to see what happens around Thanksgiving. We're all dorks. We work in the gaming industry.
Yeah.
What happens right after Thanksgiving?
Black
Friday, and like there were a bunch of Black Friday comics deals from digital outlets, and the biggest one was like everything involving Blackest Night
was a good deal.
Was 99 cents on Comixology. That was
I
hadn't pretty
read
intense.
All of it before.
I have not, and like it was more of an issue of like where do I stop?
Yeah,
I own a couple of issues. Where do I stop buying? Where do I store all of this stuff? The sale was that good.
That good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it was. It was. They also had an Avengers sale that I really liked as well.
They did?
Yes, they did. An Avengers sale on most of the Brian Michael Bendis stuff.
Oh, they did.
Somebody got a haircut. Ooh.
No, don't acknowledge Tyler Wilde. Wow. He doesn't want to be on mic today.
You're looking very Stephen Pierce.
Thank you.
Very sharp. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, now he's going to come on.
Why? Because you talked about my hair.
And now you get to see one of my beers?
Michael. Yeah. That's how it works.
Sit down. We got to work this.
Yeah.
You better be part of this, Tyler.
I've got two Tyler Wilde, everybody. Tyler Wilde, everybody.
Comic books.
Yeah.
Comic
books. Well, we were just talking about our Thanksgiving.
Wow, that was quick.
Come talk about Thanksgiving, Tyler.
No, he's gone.
He's actually working, I think.
All right, anyways. What were we talking about?
Comic book.
Yeah, there was an Avengers sale too. So what have we been reading, guys?
I did literally as an act of charity around this Christmas holiday of ours at cartoonchristmas.com. I went by my local comic store because I was having I went to the store a lot, Mission Comics down on 20th between Valencia and Mission.
Yeah.
I went there a lot and I always go there. Did I tell, like, one, it's a local comic book store. It's a physical comic book store. I love digital comics, but I agree with supporting comic book stores. People who bother having artists come in, new artists showcase their stuff. Independent artists have a place to sell their wares. Love that. So I go by there as much as possible just to check everything out. It's kind of great. Like, the thing digital comics will never have is the ability to walk into a room filled with everything. It'll always be a guided tour of a thing that you click on. Mm-hmm. You'll never be able to see everything. Everything. Yeah, even if it's just a spine in one vantage point. And it's a beautiful feeling. And I think that's why we still like going in there.
Yeah, though it makes me sad to think, well, they don't have everything. They might not have what I'm looking for.
Oh, you made me talk with beer in my face. It's not just that I love going in there and want those to still exist. If I didn't tell that story, it's right next to... I am not a coffee snob. Michael, have you heard of Phil's Coffee?
No.
No, not a coffee snob. There are two really great coffee places where it's like, oh my god, people who don't like coffee now like coffee. Mm-hmm. And I've recently have learned that I am aging horribly and traveling a lot and need 9 gallons of coffee to get me moving in the morning.
Nice.
And so I've switched to iced coffee. So I go to this place and get my first iced coffee. Mm-hmm. It's in a clear plastic beverage cup. It's building condensation, and I'm just sort of, oh, look, there's a new, they had that Batman trade I wanted, and then it's just like, I'm moving my hand around too much. The condensation of the liquid on the slippery glass, unlike the holster, and in just slow motion. Like a 40-ounce cup of coffee. Probably not 40 ounce.
A
20-ounce cup of coffee in slow motion hits the floor around a bunch of pristine comic books.
Which you now own.
No, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, no one... It's not only is it just San Francisco. Like, if you're a person desperate for business, get out of... No one's going to say, get out of my store. They're going to say, like, nah, it's cool. I'm like, dude, I know this is not cool at all. I know it is not cool. And I literally just, like, I'll be riding my bike there or passing by and just go in as fast as possible. And, I want to be something other than the coffee guy. Here, I bought something. Thank you. And I just, I didn't have anything in mind. And I went by there after Thanksgiving and just, oh, there's Spider-Man in the white Fantastic Four outfit. Never read that. No real interest here. I bought it by. And I bought it. I don't know if it's any good. You actually, I've never had to ask you this. I don't think. Is that worth reading, even though I already own it?
It's good. It's good.
Okay.
I'm not the biggest fan of Hickman's Fantastic Four, as I mentioned before on this podcast.
I'm okay with the new Fantastic Four.
Fractions Fantastic Four? Is it? Yeah. Well, there's only been two issues of it now.
Doesn't matter. It's just like
it is good.
Yeah, I'm
enjoying
it
a lot. That's what I just purchased today. I bought FF number one, the side book of Fantastic Four. And
can you give any backstory behind that?
Hmm? What do you mean?
FF. What's the deal? I don't know how
it's
it
the
in.
Future Foundation. So he decided to start like a school for super smart kids. Like just a magnet school.
The art looks like a reference to old school.
Well, no, that's Mike Allred. You don't know Mike Allred?
Look, I'm asking you to give
people...
Madman's
Mike Allred?
Yes, Madman's Mike Allred. He is very informed by Jack Kirby. Like he wants to draw on that old school pop art style of the 60s.
I can't tell you if you're shaming me or informing the audience.
I kind of miss that style because, like, comics these days, like, the Photoshop coloration, yeah. like, yeah. everything looks like super slick.
Pixar and, concept art.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it has its place, but it's not really what interests me.
No, I love Mike Allred.
And
Mike...
I kind of hate the Game of Thrones comics for that exact reason.
I have not read those.
They just look like kind of crummy superhero comics.
Yeah, Mike Allred is just
swords.
I loved his run on. I loved all his Mad Men books. I read those. He also did the art on Ecstatics, my favorite one of my favorite comics of the last 20 years. Ooh. Love that book so much. It's pretty much out of print, not on Comixology. You're gonna have trouble finding it, but it's really good. And then there's also. He's also a committed Mormon, but I forgive that. But he's great.
It's not for you to forgive.
But
for
he did a whole of Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
He did this whole book. He did a comic series about the Golden Plates and like what?
Wow, really?
What happens?
Wow. Gosh,
yes,
to read those.
Yeah. I'm tired
of only knowing anything about Mormonism from South Park.
Well, he even copped that when he was presenting the comic, it was after the South Park episode, but very soon afterward, he's like, "Look, that South Park episode was funny, and I know there are problems with Mormonism, like in its believability."
I've always said,
if
you're sitting on the ledge of logic.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds no stupider than any other religion that's ever existed. Not at all.
It's just so recent, it's easier to...
Yes, it's more recent and it's easier to... Same with Scientology. Like, that religion sounds dumb. There's aliens that get in your brain. I'm like, yeah, you have a devil who pokes people for masturbating. Like,
all right, Chris, now we're getting into another
bed. My bad.
Also, another book I read, Scalped.
Oh, so fantastic. Don't spoil my
But let me tell the entire audience how Scalped ends. So the final volume of Scalped came out, volume 10. It takes it up to issue 60, and it's really great. Like, Scalped is, I've mentioned before on this podcast, is my favorite modern comic. I'd always say it was my favorite comic currently in print. Now it isn't anymore, which is sad, but it ended where it needed to end. Like, 60 issues is enough to tell the crime noir story they were going for, and none of it felt wasted. Everything feels like it matters, and the twists and turns, and it's one of those stories where you get to the end and you're like, these characters really characters went through transformations. They grew, they learned, they changed. Like, that's one of the main things. And just all the Michael's read all of it, the final volume.
Yes.
And that's something that keeps coming up in the series multiple times, where you think you can predict how someone is going to act, and then they decide to be different. They decide they change their mind, and you can't predict them in that way. That's what I really like.
Yeah. I really wish HBO would adapt that.
It would be so good.
Partly because after I read a volume of it, it feels like I've watched a couple episodes of an HBO show.
Why wait for HBO? Having read the first couple of volumes of that, those locations are probably the easiest, cheapest
things
to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Maybe like that scene with Merle Haggard's tour bus might be a little much.
Well, also, how many really good Native American actors do you know?
I just, for a joke, downloaded the first episode of Hey Dude, and I look at, I'm a Hopi Indian, and I'm like, holy shit, this guy is a terrible actor.
But
why did they let him on a TV program? Let me look at this IMDb. One credit. Hey, dude.
But there's a very, like, for Red Crow, the main villain in the comic.
Yeah, what's that dude? He's in Maverick.
That's who I was gonna say.
That's the only Indian actor.
That would be the role of a lifetime for him.
Yeah.
That's the kind of role that a character actor like him needs to be given late in his career, that then they get a dozen Emmys for. Like, that's when the world recognizes
them. You'd know him if you saw him.
It's not Wes Studi, is it?
I don't know.
Wes Studi, you're
going to
make me
Google
that.
Sorry, but he's the.
Wes Studi was Sagat in the Street Fighter movie, and he's like one of the only Native
Americans.
No, he
wasn't that guy. But no, he was.
Also the Question in Mystery Men.
All right,
the Sphinx, whatever the hell that was.
He was the. No, he was the. Bad. He was the Native American friend of Maverick in Maverick. He was in Last of the Mohicans. No, not Last of the Mohicans. No,
Little Tanning, Ava Mendez, they can get in there and play an Indian just fine. I will not know the difference.
But yeah, I can't talk up Scalped enough. And now that it's finished, you can read the whole thing just in one. in one afternoon. Well, not one afternoon, but a good weekend.
Graham Greene is his name.
Oh, Graham Greene. Okay.
Graham Greene.
He'd be great. He would be great.
That's true.
He's in Dances with Wolves. Die Hard with a Vengeance is what I remember him from.
Oh, okay.
Primarily.
That's like, it's just so, like, relentlessly depressing. Yes. But it's, or relentlessly bleak. It's not
bleak.
Depressing.
Yeah.
But it's just like these, you know, it's this shitty South Dakota reservation mm-hmm. that has absolutely nothing going for it except a casino that's built by this guy who's suspected by the FBI for a bunch of murders, and mm-hmm. it's sort of linked to, like, the American
Leonard
Indian
Peltier.
Movement. Yeah, the Leonard Peltier. And, like, there's a very clear analog to him.
There's a Leonard Peltier in the book.
Yeah.
And
his name is Gandalf Stormcrow.
Something like that.
Well, just that everybody is kind. Nobody's good.
Yes.
Everybody's
no.
evil. Well, or, and good.
It's just so fucking squalid.
Well, it's also about how horrible reservations are.
Not to get on a high horse. Well, one, is Jason Aaron Native American?
No, he's not.
It's a perfect. Because my dad, I don't know if it was to help me learn empathy and human kindness, took me to these reservations as a kid. And, like, they're terrible places. Like, here, like, we're not going to savage you anymore, cordon you off. Here's your own space. With government funding, you will have no jobs, no pride, no dignity, serve no purpose in your community, and sit here and boring, like, well, the Indians drink a lot. They have nothing to fucking do.
I heard something a while ago, and, you know, this may be different, and it may be unfair to make a blanket generalization like this, but that... Oh, yeah, my wife actually has a friend who worked as a dealer in a casino on an Indian reservation, and mm-hmm. she said, like, these people are, like, the worst kind of nouveau riche imaginable. Like, they have all this money, they have no idea what to do with it, so they mm-hmm. do shit, like, they buy, like, these expensive, like, Cadillac SUVs and all this jewelry, all this shit they don't need, and they still live in trailers.
Yes. Yes, I think that's what the book gets at, is because that's literally the one avenue to make a living for yourself, and it's to mm-hmm. make millions of dollars. It was a loophole the state gave them, and I don't think they realized how bad it would
get. It's such a good book.
Very good book.
Well, Michael, have you read anything lately?
But never forget what the Indians, what America did to the Indians, and
was
scalp
also...
is a great way to, like, seriously, like, that's how much you can be demeaned as a culture. That's
it was funny to read that around Thanksgiving. Also.
Yeah, they introduced us to turkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but come back to me. I might
All right.
Some.
Okay. Well, so let's talk about some news real quick, guys.
Cool.
What happened recently? Well, first off,
You're going to go movie-wise, right?
There was a quickly debunked rumor that, not totally debunked, but that JGL, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, was going to play Batman in that Justice League movie that keeps seeming like it's going to happen.
It'll never.
But I don't think it will ever happen. But though, I think JGL pretty quickly was like, no, I'm not going to be Batman. Come on. Like, he's true. I wouldn't think he would be. He's true to Christopher Nolan. Like, Christopher Nolan.
He was in a Christopher Nolan movie. He wasn't signing up for a...
Yeah, he was
DC franchise.
Yeah, he wasn't signing up to be the guy for a million movies. Like, he doesn't want to do that.
I don't think he wouldn't do it.
I don't think he would.
I just think there's no real point in doing it unless you want him to really be the new Batman. Yeah. I don't think any of us do.
No, not really. And they don't
He's
need...
He's really short.
They need to just make a break from the Dark Knight universe anyway. Like, look, the Dark Knight trilogy, that's its own thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Justice League needs to be its own thing.
Yeah.
Though there is talk that apparently they're leaving the Superman movie open to have him appear in Justice League if need be. Like, they say they're not making it in such a way that there couldn't be a Justice League.
That would be a smart thing to say if you like money.
Yes. Well, I think finally after the Avengers made $7 billion. Not really, $2 billion. But anyway, after the Avengers made all that money, Warner finally realized how much they had the opportunities they had wasted for so many years.
But I still wish it would have shown them the bigger picture, is that Marvel, yes, always wanted to make an Avengers movie like this, but could not without 7 years of trials
yeah.
in other movies.
It had
and
to
then
work
so DC
it.
Saw Avengers got made and just like, we're making a Justice League movie. Like, you didn't have a decade to prepare these characters.
Well, just five years. 5 years.
No, it was way longer.
From Iron Man to Avengers.
What year did Iron Man come out?
It's 2008.
2008. How long were all these movies in production?
Well, okay, yeah, maybe. All right, well, I'd say
like when they call it Phase One, like it started a long time ago.
Yes.
The thing with Avengers is it's not just that that stuff proved that sure. you know Marvel properties had legs. It's that seeing each character get their own individual movie
yes.
made the eventual team up much more meaningful.
Crazy.
Like they could do an Avengers movie,
crazy
easy, but it would be like a bunch of nobodies who were not used to playing these characters. And they would all be arguing over screen time, like somebody would have to be a clear star.
Yeah. Well, and they'd have to have an origin story for these guys and explain that.
Marvel built these characters like they did in the comics. It's a beautiful thing to experience. But for DC to come out, we cast Halle Berry as Catwoman, and then we're going to put her in just the movie. Like, it doesn't... I don't think it's going to work like that. They're going to cast stars, they're going to do stunt shit in order to make this thing as big as the Avengers. And it can't be unless... I honestly, and I've heard people say this.
Unless they invest over
time. Dude, make another Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. Like, make that the franchise. Quit quitting.
Yeah, they just. DC
Ryan Reynolds
quits.
Is not a bad Green Lantern. It can be done with that dude. Like, establish these people as characters that people know, so then when I see them in a movie, it makes it look like the Who Framed Roger Rabbit of your universe. They're all existing in the same spot.
Well, the thing is, like, I think Hollywood, when something fails, it just assumes. That thing doesn't work. People don't want to see a Green Lantern movie.
No, you failed.
Not we made a bad movie.
Yeah.
You know, but like, they never blame themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they never do.
That's absurd. Well, and now we don't get another Green Lantern movie.
Speaking of movies on the Marvel side of things, but not the Avengers, it's so there's been a lot of talk of the Days of Future Past film.
That was cool news.
So Bryan Singer is definitely directing it. So it's awesome to see Bryan Singer coming back to the X-Men.
Let me punctuate every one of these amazing things with a correct. Bryan Singer.
All right, so Bryan Singer's back. Then on his Twitter, Bryan Singer confirms that both Patrick Stewart and Ian McClellan are coming back to the film. But Fassbender and McAvoy will be in it too because it's a time travel film with the Days of Future Past. Then, now, the most recent thing is that Wolverine will be in it.
I've been trying to point this out. My job, well, at least used to be, was reporting on pulp culture to an extent. And the news came out today, Hugh Jackman will be in Wolverine! Woo! We're all idiots that we never thought to ask... whether Hugh Jackman would be... Has Hugh Jackman been Wolverine before? Yes. Has he... Hugh Jackman holds the record as the longest-standing superhero to play his role in a string of movies. Mm. He's the only person in Hollywood who has played the same superhero 5 times in 5 different movies.
Wow.
And that includes the first X-Men... X-Men prequel.
Yes,
which he was in too.
First class.
He have been in it? We just never ask because we're dumb.
Well, he wasn't advertised for it.
Dumb.
It was just a little. It was a little moment.
Actually, technically, it was the second X-Men prequel because his own movie was
X-Men Origins.
Son of
yeah,
a bitch.
Sorry,
son of a bitch.
Well, we all forgot about that because it was kind of awful.
Chronologically first, I did not forget how awful that movie is. It's hysterically awful.
I just love that Hugh. I like that Hugh Jackman is committed to being Wolverine. He's not over it yet.
He is totally. He doesn't care at all. He was given financial incentive to keep being Wolverine. He's executive producer on his solo movies. He makes a shitload of money by continuing to want to be a Wolverine.
Yeah,
Halle Berry did not get that deal. Neither did Famke Janssen.
Well, they aren't as cool as Wolverine.
I think Famke Janssen's one of the hottest people in the universe.
Yes, but they're not. Wolverine is the coolest character. He makes or breaks an X-Men.
His line in that. Can we spoil First Class?
Yes.
His one line in First Class. Does anyone remember
fuck
what
off.
It is? It's fuck off.
Mm-hmm. In a PG-13 movie.
In a PG-13 movie.
He got the one fuck. The one non-sexual fuck.
It was the best moment of that film because it totally was a shocker. But. Like it would be cool if he was, if Days
now you've
of Future,
got me thinking of Wolverine giving the shocker to people. I imagine Blade would be involved.
If
Days
of Future Past works like the comic, then Wolverine
needs to be in a lot of it.
He'd only need to be in about a half hour of it.
But he needs to be in two timelines.
No. He'd if it's the past when James McAvoy and Fassbender are their age, Wolverine doesn't need to be a part of that team. Wolverine would just be in the future time. Now, well, this Days of Future Past sounds like it's really kind of mixed up because if it's going to be in the late 60s, that doesn't fit with the X-Men who were in the Days of Future Past comics were the new X-Men, the 80s X-Men. But this sounds like it's still going to be the 60s X-Men in the current... It's complicated. But I still... I also think that Hugh Jackman is like... He likes working with Bryan Singer. It's the director, too.
He has a vested interest in
Wolverine.
Yes,
but also Bryan Singer... Fine.
He gets a cut
be
of every
super,
toy.
Be in, just, he just be the most
cynical. What person would have
about.
Watched Wolverine and let that movie go forward? Yes, it was during a writer's strike, and it had to... It was a train that was coming in. He couldn't stop it.
It was just going to happen.
Hugh Jackman will live the rest of his life because the deal he's been given, and so will the other Marvel characters. Like, that's what the deal is now. Usually the actors who played these characters are treated like shit.
Yeah, well, even like it's for James Bond. It used to just be, well, it's the honor of being James Bond. You're just James Bond,
and I think Christopher Reeve is on record. Like, these movies are, this is a terrible script. You're obligated. You're going to pay me more? No, but you can't work on anything else.
Well, you're,
because you are this
stereotyped
character.
To Superman. You can't appear in something not as
I get that.
Superman.
It's not just people like wanting more money. It's like, you need to compensate me more for asking me to do this.
But these days, these characters... Well, I'd say Hugh Jackman is maybe closest to being stereotyped as his character, but like... When they hire people, Robert Downey Jr. is always going to be Robert Downey. Like, you see Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, you know it's him. When you see Chris Hemsworth, Hemsworth can just cut his hair. He can be different dudes. Like, he's just the beefy kind of action star. Same with Chris Evans. Like, I don't think... And meanwhile, Christian Bale was an accomplished actor way before he starred in Batman. So being a superhero doesn't, you know, define you anymore. Mostly the people they cast to be superheroes are famous for something else first. Andrew Garfield, like, he's the closest to an unknown these days who gets cast as a superhero. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Downey Jr. wasn't a household name before Iron Man.
He wasn't a household name.
He was a household name for being a drug addict.
Yes.
But, like, they're actually casting the right people for the right roles.
Yes. And Robert Downey Jr. deserves to be paid hundreds of millions of dollars for
his involvement in Iron Man leads to a lot bigger things for the company, and I think they're finally like treating them like, well, you have to shepherd this with us.
Yeah, it's made or break, but it's made or broken by him. Yeah,
exactly. Like Val Kilmer, Kilmer dipping out on Batman, like that is not something. Can you replace Michael Keaton for a second? Yeah, I guess. I don't like this movie. I'm not coming back. Like, that'll never happen in new superhero movies.
I'm gonna go do The Ghost in the Darkness.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Glad
Island Dr. Moreau.
Okay, not so much. Not so much.
But that movie's funny because he does a Marlon Brando impersonation in it. Yeah. And he's mocking Marlon Brando when he does it.
I pulled up an article I thought was funny if we're talking about news, and it was about Grant Morrison finally responding to Alan Moore. You don't have to read it because I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
You remember the audience. Something about, like, just Alan Moore in general is a fascination for us. And we're finally at that point where, like, yeah, you were a visionary.
Yeah.
And everything he says will always be kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think he's still brilliantly talented, but he's getting weirder and weirder.
Well, you and I,
he has a series of short films into premiering on Vice.
Does he?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But Michael and I both read the most recent League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, right? And in that, it's very good. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. But in it is him being a grumpy old man about hating Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, people. People directly say to Harry Potter, you're a banal antichrist, you're just boring.
Oh, you spoiled it.
You suck.
But you're a banal wizard, you're a disappointment.
Yeah.
But, well, I don't the care. Thing is, like, if you read like Promethea, like Alan Moore subscribes to this whole like hermetic idea of what a wizard should be, and it's all very complicated, but like set in like real life mythology and magical practice, and
and then so Harry Potter would be an anthem to that.
Yeah.
All right, but so what about Elmer?
I don't know. We're on. We're at about the 35-minute mark.
We should say it after the
break. All right, after the break, let's hear what Alan Moore had to say.
All
right. We'll be right back, episode 35 of Cape Crisis.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Oh, the times, they are a-changing.
Hello, all. Thanks again for listening to Cape Crisis, my favorite comic book podcast, and should be yours. If you enjoy the show, please help us support it by going to lasertimepodcast.com. When you go to our homepage, you'll see on the left side of the screen a little donate button that'll take you to PayPal to give a little money to help us out. Or you can buy t-shirts through the t-shirt store link. Either of those help keep the show going and keep the computers running. Also, if you'd like to support us in a way that'll really help us out, and that's with Amazon.com. Perfect to use around the holidays because you know you're going to be buying stuff on Amazon anyway. So just click on any of the Amazon links on the right side of the screen. You don't have to buy the thing you click on. But anything you pull up through a link on there and purchase will give a little money to us and really help us out. So do that, please. Also, if you listen to the podcast on iTunes or Zune Marketplace, be sure to be subscribing and please, please give us reviews. Give us a 5-star rating. It really helps us out a lot in our standings and helps us be more popular. So please do that, please. And lastly, now it's time for the Hank's Corner Pick of the Week. So this week I'm going to pick out a book by Ed Brubaker that just got back into print. He's one Ed Brubaker, along with Michael Lark, that are two of my favorite creators. They've worked together. They did great work on Daredevil. One of their earliest works, Scene of the Crime, is now back in print in a new collection. It's a great book about a private investigator working in the Bay Area in current times and getting to the bottom of this this decades old mystery. It's a really good book. I don't want to reveal anything else about it, but it's a nice gritty noir story. Like, if you're looking for that, it's definitely worth picking up. You'll see a link to picking it up on Amazon, the new fancy hardcover edition to it. The link will be on the lasertimepodcast.com page for this episode, or you'll find it on capecrisis.com as well. So please check that out. And now, back to the show.
Avengers Assemble!
Bringing us in, that's Nicole Westbrook with It's Thanksgiving.
You're a real jerk, you know that?
Oof, I'm a real jerk.
No, we couldn't do that last week, and that song sucks.
I hope she at least she's the one making some money off that and not just the evil record producers.
It's not the record,
the record producers, if it's anything like what happened with Rebecca Black, they are paid
for hire.
Yeah, they are paid by her and her family to make her into a quote-unquote star.
So worse than like people making their children Lindsay Lohan, they're trying to make their children Tay Zonde and make their children the next Chocolate Rain.
At least Chocolate Rain was self-started. It wasn't like these people write the songs, they perform the music, they get the rapper to appear in the video.
It's like someone having a baby and naming they shoot it Charlie just so everything. It can bite fingers and like get a piece of that action.
Mm-hmm. So Well, who got rich off Rebecca Black then? Did Rebecca Black
I think
rich?
She made some money off
she
that.
Should.
Yeah, I think she toured for a while. Like, she had her brief moment in the spotlight.
But I thought they were, like, some people were saying that was an example of cyberbullying. How everybody was making
She said that. She actually said, what I've been subjected to is, like, cyberbullying, but in real life.
All right. Anyway, guys, welcome back. Cape Crisis.
They're a Rebecca. Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Gobble,
gobble. Gobble,
gobble. You're on. Gobble, gobble. We're back from Thanksgiving. Also, man, you know, after Thanksgiving, I am in the mood for Christmas time. And that's when I broke out the Christmas music, started listening to it. Let me suggest already that Sufjan Stevens has a new Christmas collection out called Silver and Gold. I really like it.
Silver and Gold.
No, if you'd rather hear that song sung by a mousy twee artist who sounds like he's afraid of his own shadow, find that Sufjan Stevens.
Give me Burl Ives, a hard-drinking American who can barely stand. Silver.
I heard Burl Ives was quite an anti-Semite.
Oh dear.
Ringo, this was told. Are stealing my silver.
Racism.
I could be wrong, but I'd heard that.
Why don't we just assume that anybody born before 1930 is probably has some negative preconception directed at Jews.
That's true. Guys, back to the for the real show. So. Last week we asked everybody.
Wait, I had to.
Okay, great. Yeah, what we were waiting for after the break.
Sorry,
Alan Moore. What about him?
I was fascinated by this, and also led me to. I should have brought it up then, but Jason Aaron has the post of like, "I'm done with you. I'm done."
Oh yeah,
what
that
you
was.
Think.
I've talked about that. Jason Aaron had a good point. He's well, and I've read that from Ed Brubaker too, where Brubaker says. If Alan Moore has admitted that he doesn't read current comics anyway, why should we care about his opinion?
I never thought of it like whenever they say something, it's like he's not only disgracing the medium I work really hard in. He's he constantly says there's nobody of any talent working.
Yeah. Well, and
like I used to work, I know you. Like you,
and sometimes he says it in a very like self-aggrandizing way of like. I broke all the rules and made the only great stuff back in the 80s, and nobody has made anything as good as me since then.
And I know I'm on record saying that about video game podcasts. Wow, dumb joke. No, he said this, I forget where, but this is the quote that's stood out, and it's on Comics Alliance. I find it tragic. This is Grant Morrison talking about Alan Moore.
All right.
I find it quite, because Alan Moore said a ton of negative shit towards him in particular, instead of just like trashing the whole industry and new writers.
Oh,
he's actually
really?
Taken to.
What's his problem with Grant Morrison?
That he's ripping him off and whenever. Like, yeah. So Grant Morrison says, I find it tragic and but quite pertinent to this piece. That the loudest voice in our business, the one that carries the furthest and is taken the most seriously by the mainstream media, is the one that offers nothing but contempt and denunciation, with barely a single good word to say about any of the many accomplished and individual writers currently working in the mainstream comics, let alone the wealth of brilliant ideas creators indie creators. Does he ever, for instance, use his high media profile to do anything but steer the potential readers away from modern comic books and their creators? While overplaying his own achievements and placing himself center stage at every turn, how hard would it be to say something encouraging, positive, or hopeful about the general improved standard of writing in all the comic books these days? Or at least say nothing at all. And if I may untangle the logic behind so much of this hectoring, Moore constantly reiterates the idea that all modern comics are copied from stuff he did in the 80s, and they're all rubbish. Is he genuinely saying that his influence has been entirely malignant? Is he actually... if he actually believed that, I'd feel sorry for him. I see my own influence all over the place, and I'm quite chuffed.
Yeah,
chuffed means excited.
Well, I think British talk. Some of the best people working in comics are basically prickly, weird assholes. Like Alan Moore, Dave Sim.
I do like my artists a little bit unapproachable and nasty and
horrible. Well, that's... I'm glad to hear Grant Morrison's response on the topic, because he's also like he's a very well-spoken British writer too. Well, actually, he's Scottish, not British,
with a body of work to stand on.
Yeah, and that he can stand on, and he's right. Like Al Moore is getting to be a grumpy old man. Like, it's true. Like, his...
That was the sad point. Like, he's right. The mainstream media pays attention because Alan Moore is the closest thing to a household name uh-huh. that comics writers have. And so whenever he says anything, he shits on the fucking medium itself.
Mm-hmm. Entirely.
Whole medium.
Mm-hmm. In the
painting with broad strokes is the only language the mainstream media understands.
Oh, so. Maybe so. Maybe he's just really good at
and
mainstream
media. And it's true
media.
That he... Maybe. And also...
He does worship a snake god.
Well, and he feels like he's been, and he feels totally screwed over by the system of comics.
And I get that, and I know what it's like to feel screwed over by a company.
But yeah, I've spoken in support of Alan Moore still on this thing many times because
that's recording.
Yeah, it's recording. Sorry,
I've spoken in support of Alan Moore many times on here because I do think it's his right to say there shouldn't be other Watchmen comics existing and. And I think whatever he wants to say about the current state of the industry, like, he has been a part of it for such a long time. But he should be celebrating the fact that, like, Morrison's also right there. Like, Al Moore can do whatever he wants in comics. And that type of freedom that he has wasn't there in 1984. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't That's do true. That much. He should be proud of the achievements he's done. And I can even see Al Moore being mad at Grant Morrison... Seeing it, like, I could see him seeing Grant Morrison as like a sellout because he still works for DC and giving him shit about that. But if Grant Morrison wants to work and write about the universe of DC, that's his right. If he, it's just silly.
It's mean. I can't imagine a filmmaker talking that way about other filmmakers.
Yeah. I could see.
Well, sometimes you just have to say, I'm sorry, Alan Moore, not everything can be Gray Shirt or First American.
I know he's. I still think I thought his most recent League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was still really great.
Oh yeah, like, it really. Was, I'm so scared.
He still has fantastic talent, and I make fun, but I do actually like the titles.
No,
I
do. But as this prolific character who comes out and slams the entire medium we talk about on the show, it's always
That he. Well, especially because it doesn't take into account he just. He's doing what the opponents of comics have done forever. Yes. Just like, oh, it's all garbage. It's just for children. Like, he doesn't say it's just for children, but he just says, oh, nobody's writing anything good. Well, how do you know? Well, I don't read them.
They suck. But occasionally I do because I need to eat. And that's what when I mentioned that he has a Vice video series coming out that he's writing and producing, it's like put up or shut up time. Let's see how good you really are. Because maybe you're the one who's allowed to operate out of the confines of certain restrictions of modern comics. But if you're really that great an artist, these videos better be awesome. By the way, you've talked about other creative people.
Like I said, his most recent league was still really good.
That's what I had not heard.
My only complaint about his work of the last, since Lost Girls, is that he is obsessed with sex. Like, there's just too much fucking in his books these days. That's just what bugs me. But whatever. All right, so that was very thank you. That was good.
That was very thank you.
But now we only have time for the question of the week, response and posit. First to last week's question of the week, which was, what was your favorite old school crossover? And I don't think I phrased it correctly because most people picked cross company crossovers. Such as our first responders, White Steve Harvey. Picked out Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man, which was a great, great old school crossover. But when we were actually talking about, like, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths and Secret Wars. But that is a very good one. The art in that story is by Ross Andrew, who I think is a very underrated artist. Oh, and then also right after him, Darth Ender X. Talked about a comic I'd never heard of called IDW Infestation, which by the cover seems to be zombies attacking G.I. Joe, Star Trek, Transformers, and Ghostbusters at the same time.
I don't think that's
come out yet. One of you other people look that up for me, see if it's actually real.
Is He-Man in there at all? Because otherwise it's not like a 80s mashup gasm.
Well, they can only afford so many licenses. Then there's also, I wanted to pull up, somebody, Cooper, brought up something for real, which was, or something fitting with what we asked for, Onslaught, which was quite a mega crossover in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Looking at the cover in that he posted of X-Men Onslaught, it reminds me of the ridiculous costumes they were wearing at the time. Wolverine was at his most feral and was, like, wearing rags. It looks so awful. Gosh. And then Beezen, he brought up Punisher meets Archie. I love that one. Oh, such a good comic. Art by John Buscema.
I still can't even believe that ever existed because I haven't read it.
It's a lot of fun. It's fun.
Huh. But who signed off on that?
Marvel was cool with it, and Archie.
Of course, Marvel is cool with it.
Archie just wants to be in the public eye.
Yep,
that's all Archie wants is to just be.
I gotta be seen.
No, yeah, just
it's
to be.
Like somebody came up with that, and it's like, who are the characters who are most unlike each other, yet would not actually kill each other?
I think Archie too just likes to be, especially back in the mid '90s, to be treated as a peer by Marvel. Yeah. Probably was pretty cool for them. Mm-hmm. John Wahizel. Yeah,
he writes our comic reviews.
Oh, does he? Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, buddy, thanks. He brings up Batman versus Predator, which I love.
Wow.
Art by Andy Kuber and Adam Kuber.
That,
Kuber
that was
brothers.
The book that started off the whole weird, like everybody versus Predator series.
Yeah, the Batman and the Predator is like the perfect matchup. Yeah. Like the fighting in Gotham,
much
and
better than Superman versus aliens.
And I remember Batman beats Predator with a bat at the end of it.
And he's like wearing his heat reflective armor.
Ah, good stuff.
Which gets beaten off of him.
So the Predator beat off Batman.
Yes, the Predator beat off Batman. And I'm sure there's a fan fiction out there that describes exactly that scenario.
Oh, I'm certain of that.
Chris, stop farting.
Sorry. I needed to punctuate your joke with that.
Oh, good. Cody Stovall brings up the Simpsons Futurama crossovers that have happened.
Always wanted to read that.
Wow.
Those are fun, mostly because they treat it as Futurama is the real world, and they're falling into Simpsons
comics.
Makes
the most sense.
Yeah.
I do love the ending of the Simpsons game.
At the mansion?
Yes,
in Matt Groening's mansion?
People have to fight the Simpsons have to fight the Futurama.
In Matt Groening's mansion, surrounded by millions of dollars.
Yeah, million
millions. Then Smars brought up something I had actually never heard of before, which that there was a crossover one-shot comic in Japan of a meetup between Dragon Ball and One Piece.
What?
Which sounds awesome. Like, it had, like, just the characters from the series meeting up. And it
was that, like, last year?
Had the art by Akira Toriyama and Aichi Oda, the creators of those two series.
Like, wow.
I'm going to have to look up a torrent.
We just watched the Dragon Ball movie, and that
Dragon
is
Ball
so
Evolution?
Evolution, wow. And it is so fucking wonderful. You have
Luther
to see it.
From Smallville plays Piccolo, right?
No. Piccolo is played by James Marsters' Spike from Buffy.
Oh, Spike from Buffy. I get those two confused.
And there's this awful white character. He looks like the baby. What did I say? Holy shit! I already forgot.
You're trying to remember your riffs from last
night.
But
it was accurate. It was very accurate. Mm-hmm. He basically looks like if Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad had been born premature and then given Goku hair. But then just like every time the word Goku is said with no sense of irony, Goku, no. Where
Goku,
are you going,
you high
Goku?
School student. Because he goes to
you
high school
with...
You
think you're so bad, Goku?
Goku like, and Chi-Chi go to high school together, right?
Chi-Chi's played by a real-world cast member.
Oh, that's... Jesus.
Doesn't Chi-Chi's name basically mean breasts?
I thought it meant pussy.
No, I think it's
Does anybody
breasts.
Else want to say pussy? Yeah. I don't want to
I believe breasts. Japtin America, in the first post, thank you, sir, says, the Extinction Agenda from the 1990s made him a hardcore comic collector for 10 years. Ooh. That was the X-Men and X-Factor and New Mutants all fighting together. It's a pretty cool crossover, as I recall, as well. Also, as a kid, the new... this is Super Fighting Robot. He says, as a kid, the new Fantastic Four of Grey Hulk, Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and Spider-Man was awesome. I remember that. I wish... That had lasted for more than four issues. That was quite a team up.
Weird.
Can't give you everything you want.
I know. And then Pedo Bearclaw, our old pal, he says, it's terrible now, but Maximum Carnage was amazing when I read it as it came out in the 90s. It felt amazing then, but I also know it's awful.
Did nobody bring up the original Transformers G.I. Joe mashup from
That's
the
80s? Funny you should say that to the next person who said that. The Darvy 32 also brought that up. I don't remember that one. I didn't read that one as a kid, but that was a good one.
The Decepticons teamed up with Cobra and the Autobots teamed up with G.I. Joe.
I think it would be funny if Cobra Commander and...
They don't seem like they had the
Megatron
same agenda.
Megatron walking around with Cobra Commander in his hand.
I think it'd be funny if Cobra Commander like met Starscream and was like, "You sound like me! You sound like me!"
They may have made a joke like that. I don't know. I didn't read the whole thing.
Here, call Destro and trick him. You'll
really
think it's
one
me.
Of those crossovers that you shouldn't commit reading to.
Well, when you're 9, I think it's
what happened back then.
And you don't realize, like, this is really cynical and callous because they're just both properties owned by Hasbro.
Mm-hmm. You know, can't believe people like them and the writers can't believe they have to combine them together. That's impossible and stupid. Okay, it's my job.
Why are we writing about this kitty shit? Oh, right, we work at Marvel.
My bad.
If I pay my dues enough on this, I'll get to write Spider-Man someday.
Yeah, I'll get to write my own Watchmen with Sergeant Slaughter.
all right, so this week's question of the week. What is it? Well, earlier we talked about Hugh Jackman. Playing Wolverine all the time. But what happens when he finally turns 50 and his amazing, beautiful body starts to age? And
Motion capture.
He can't play Wolverine anymore. Who should be the next Wolverine?
Ooh, I see where you're going.
Well, who should it be? Who is tough enough and grody enough? I'll say it first. I'm going to go with Ben Affleck's brother, Casey Affleck.
Wow. Okay.
Interesting.
That's not even jokey. That would totally work.
I think that Wolverine needs to be a shorter guy also, but just get Casey Affleck in the gym some.
And I feel like I've said this 1,000 times in very recent podcasts, but the Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford is the greatest movie of the last decade, as is his performance in that as Robert Ford.
Oh, yeah?
He's a powerful coward.
Oh, that's good. No, I think he'd do a great job as Wolverine.
God damn, that's
he
such
seems
a good idea.
Dirty like Wolverine is, like, but Hugh Jackman still has that, you know, he still has that metrosexual cleanliness that he tries to grow hair over as Wolverine, but he just can't do it.
I don't know why I want to say Artie Lang.
He'd have to lose about 200 pounds.
No, he wouldn't, because he'd be playing Wolverine in his 50s. And he would have a perfectly gray beard and totally fat, but still gets really angry and hits people on occasion.
Artie.
I'd like to see Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
with Lord of the Rings trick photography, so it looks like he's about like 5'6".
Oh, that's great. Force perspective, like from the gate.
I think that'd be like really weird, but also amazing.
Yeah, I'm completely down.
Like
with
he's got the stocky build.
I'd like that.
I think
too.
What I'm basically asking, and I don't want to come off as man hungry here. Who is the sexiest, grisliest man in Hollywood right now coming up? Because you know what, I'm not
Zombie
watching,
John Holmes.
I'm not as familiar with iCarly as Michael seems to think I am.
Well, I guess Taylor Lautner would be a lot of people's first pick.
Jacob from Twilight?
Yeah.
I was thinking of him, but like he's tainted by he's that hairless. Series.
Yes. He is hairless, that's true. Well, I bet he's shaved himself for this.
Like, I'd never make this argument that all characters should look like me, but it is a little exciting to see like, oh, dude, there's hair on the back of that dude's neck. Thanks, Wolverine. Now I don't have an on-screen character. I have an on-screen character to look upon that feels like me, other than Bob Hoskins. Yes, thank
Bob
you.
Bob Hoskins, he'd be a good Wolverine.
Yeah.
Bob Hoskins is dying, guys.
No, he has Alzheimer's. His brain is just
dead. Thought he had cancer.
Oh, my bad. Well, it's probably something. You're not
he
supposed
could,
to live
he
that
could
long
play
anyway.
That weird, abortive Australian version of Wolverine that said dingo instead of bub.
Kids! Remember?
No.
You guys, look it up on YouTube, guys. The Pride of the X-Men. The pilot for a Saturday morning 80s cartoon show of X-Men that never happened. But the animation
really
is really good. No, he's Australian.
Or something like, whatever. His voice fluctuates, and it's like, it's incredible.
Yeah, and then, incidentally, they got an Australian guy to play him at doing an American accent.
But then they also had Pyro, who was also Australian in the cartoon. It was very weird.
I think it was an Australian... I'm yawning.
Australia was huge in the 80s.
Yeah, it was.
It really was.
As the Simpsons proved to us.
And Crocodile Dundee.
We share a collective memory.
When I met... Well, that was... Here's a quick funny story about Australia. And good day to any of our Australian listeners. But
our Australian listener.
And that must sound weird to Australians. Like, Australia was huge in the 80s.
Now we don't care. It's nothing. Who cares?
Nobody pays attention to Australia. Yes,
nobody gives a Vegemite shit about you and your country.
No, so I met a year ago when I was in Japan for my first trip there. I met an Australian journalist there, and he was like, oh, hey, you must... What do you even know about Australia? You must only know The Simpsons. What The Simpsons tell you about Australia, which is funny because that's all we know about America. I was like, oh.
So we're on an even playing field.
Yeah. But then I told him, like, no, there's Crocodile. I listed five other stereotypes. I was like, there's Crocodile Dundee and the Baz Luhrmann film Australia.
And the Road Warrior.
And stereotypes about being founded by prisoners.
And Young Einstein.
Young Einstein. Well, that's more about Tasmania, really.
Oh, I see.
Although the villain is Preston Preston of the Perth Prestons.
Here is, if I can go off on this again, when you guys call Disney, the old Disney stuff from the 40s, the insensitive stuff, you call it racist. And I have made the argument that that's all they knew, because travel wasn't that possible. Worldwide media was not being exchanged. Some guy came back with a photograph of a dude lying down in a sombrero from Mexico, and for years, that's what people thought Mexico was. That's all they had to go on.
Or one person with a plate in their lip.
Yes, that's all they had to go on for what continents were. And I think the 80s started up, and
the 80s started up.
Out of nowhere. It wasn't even the 70s yet.
With the Rolling Stones, Windows 95.
All the 80s is arguably the point where we all became connected culturally. Mm-hmm. And then people found these white people, who were very different, had a strange accent, but all of a sudden they could get the same video on MTV, they could communicate on the same internet, and I think there was that weird fascination with Australians. They speak our language, look just like us, but are really weird.
And they have all these marsupials.
In the 80s, I can't, like, I have to imagine it's the closest people felt to Krypton. Like, there's just this planet over here of white people who do nothing like us. Mm-hmm. They speak English, have the same physiology. They're crazy different, though.
They shave with giant knives.
Yes. Does that make any sense?
You know, I did.
Fuck kangaroos.
Yeah, I just called them Charleswazzers.
You just called me a fucking Charleswazzer in front of Michael Rapaport?
So please,
such
guys.
Such disrespect.
Answer that question of the week in the old forums on lasertimepodcast.com. In the comic section, in the comic discussion section.
So good.
Those are the words I want to say.
You said podcast like Hank Hill, and it really...
Podcast.
Podcast.
Laser Time Podcast.
When I'm saying something I don't understand, I enunciate it too clearly as the Hank Hillism.
Well, we're reaching the end of...
What about Kesha?
We're reaching the end of another episode, dudes. But I did want to say, you know, you already heard the plugs in the middle, but... Do listen to the new pro wrestling podcast that Mr. Dave Rudden and I and Chris Antista did this week. It was first episode, once a month, but I think the first episode turned out really good. Cheap Popcast is the name of it.
It's very, very pro wrestling. Yeah. It's not anti-wrestling.
Not anti-wrestling in the slightest.
Yeah, that's a dad joke.
So subscribe to it on iTunes and review it too, just as you subscribe and review to this podcast, Cape Crisis.
Yeah, and we will have actually something up for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Do not get your hopes up.
Dingle.
We just want to make sure, like, I was really, Dave and I were really upset that when iTunes finally accepted the podcast, 10 days later, it was after the Survivor, we talk about
after
the Survivor Series,
yes.
It was after it was over. So the thing that has to represent us for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to give you something else.
Oh, boy.
In between the next show, so we can make sure we get those shows up before the pay-per-views air.
Exciting.
And then I don't know. Don't complain that much. Please subscribe, though.
Don't complain. Don't complain, assholes.
I didn't mean to make it sound like that, but I can see how you would
and
take that.
And let's remind you once more, you know, Christmas time or the holidays or whatever. If you're buying stuff through Amazon.
Oh, hey, we're going to do a cartoon Christmas.
Yeah, what?
A cartoonchristmas.com.
Oh, that too. That feel the holidays are alive once more.
Dozens of friends actually working really hard on putting that stuff out. I have a lot of help this year.
Good. I'm glad, Chris. Yeah, I was worried about you being able to, you know, burning your candle at both ends while also burning the middle of it.
I didn't know what
shouldering
to do. During
this self-imposed burden that you take on every year.
I didn't know you were going to refuse to help this year, Henry.
I haven't refused yet. I haven't officially refused.
Officially.
Putting him on the hook. That's just in the show.
All right. Well, so we'll talk to you next week, bros.
Everybody badger Henry into doing something for Kirk.
Listen, we'll see you next week on K-Prices.